Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with my co-host Cliff Stewart. Also joining us is Ethel Lopez, Vice President of A Just Cause. A Just Cause will bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, Sam.
Great, thank you.
Awesome. Hey, you know, we have been on several programs over the last several weeks, and this is a very interesting journey. And, you know, with the IRP6 and A Just Cause, and we have a very good show tonight. You know, one of the things I want to, you know, throw out there as a disclaimer to start with, because of the fact that we will be talking about a lot of legal issues and a lot of things that folks will be saying, hey, that may have happened to me. And, you know, I want to see if I might be able to reach out to A Just Cause and to at least talk on the show and get some legal advice. Well, that's where I bring in this disclaimer. Cliff and I are not attorneys, and A Just Cause Coast to Coast is not a program that provides legal advice. The opinions expressed during this program are those of the host and the guests and do not reflect that of A Just Cause. Please contact your legal professionals for specific legal needs. And again, we want to say thank you for joining the program tonight. Now, right out of the chute, you know, a lot of folks may say, you know, well, what is A Just Cause all about? You know, why did it get started? You know, I haven't heard anything about this organization. And so, you know, I want to know a little bit about that. And so that's one of the things we're going to do on this program, Cliff and Ethel, is number one, express to the folks what A Just Cause is about. And then, you know, we will expound upon the story of the IRP6 case. And we're going to take our time doing that from show to show. We're going to use that as a sort of a launching point, a case study, if you will. But to start off, Cliff, I'll go on and share with the listeners what A Just Cause is. You know, Just Cause is a volunteer organization. We were established in 2005, and it was started as a result of this case that we're going to be talking about from time to time and getting into quite extensively, is the IRP6 case. Now, the IRP6 case is a case that basically, in a nutshell, is a corporate debt collection case that got over-criminalized by an overzealous FBI agent, an overreaching assistant U.S. attorney out of Denver. And then you also have a judge that was just, you know, over the top when it comes to not executing the duties of the bench in the manner that should be respectful of a federal judge. Now, we're going to be naming names on this show. And so, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, we want to be sure that we're holding people accountable. And so as we get into it, and we'll be identifying all the players here real soon, but one of the things that about A Just Cause is also the fact that, you know, we're seeking accountability and balance in the judicial process. Now, A Just Cause was also started, as I stated, as a result of the IRP6 case. Now, the IRP6, they are Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetri Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. You'll be hearing a lot more about these gentlemen and their plight. In having a dream to start an IT technology company, and that dream turning into a nightmare through the federal court system. Now, you know, one of the things I'll point out is that I'm the president of A Just Cause, and Cliff is also a part of A Just Cause. We've been with A Just Cause since its inception. The IRP6 were very instrumental in setting up A Just Cause because some of the things that happened to them as they were going through this case, they realized that, you know, we all are naive as to how the judicial system works. And when you think that the system works one way and it does not work that way, the guys realized that we need to bring attention to this. And, you know, since they were experiencing it firsthand, they played a vital role in setting up A Just Cause. And so, you know, Cliff and I, we were part of IRP Solutions as well. So you'll hear us talk about a lot of things as if we have firsthand knowledge on it, and that is because we do have firsthand knowledge on that. I was a vice president within IRP Solutions. I was the vice president of sales and marketing, And Cliff was one of the IT system administrators as well as a software developer for the company. So there are a lot of things that you'll hear us talk about firsthand. So, Cliff, why don't you share a little bit about at the high level as far as IRP6 and the IRP6 case and IRP solutions?
Well, IRP6, as Sam named them out, we've been knowing these guys for several years, most of them over 20 years, where we have blood relations. Clint Stewart, he's my brother. Gary Walker and David Banks are my brother-in-laws. Ken Barnes was my college roommate. I went to high school with him and Demetrius Harper. And Dave Zerpolo, we've been knowing for over 20 years as well. And, you know, when they came together to start an IT company, Gary Walker had an idea of some software that he needed to develop, some software that was desperately needed by our nation. And he came together, with his friends to do that. And then in the interim, you know, they get prosecuted for it by the very people that they were looking to build the software for. You know, during the time at IRP Solutions, when we were working there developing the software, things were very exciting. Every time the guys would make a trip, and, you know, you were there with them as well, Sam, but when they would come back, when you guys would come back, everything was exciting, saying, hey, we went to Department of Homeland Security, and this is the feedback we got from them, or we went to NYPD, and this is what they said about the software. So it was very, very exciting times, and to be able to work with the people that that you know and trust, and the people that have mentored you in your professional career, it was a great pleasure to work with them. And, you know, now we have the great pleasure to continue to fight for them to ensure that they get exonerated as soon as possible.
And, you know, Cliff, it's important as far as this program is concerned with the IRP6 and IRP solutions, you know, is to explain that, you know, this case got minimal media coverage at best. I mean, you know, and so that's why A Just Cause has launched a all-out social media campaign. And, you know, there are things that we'll find out about this case that, and that's why I said earlier that it will serve as a case study. You know, sometimes folks may say, well, why are they always talking about the IRP6 case? Well, we've been on several shows, and we've only scratched the surface. You know, we may get interviewed for about an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and, you know, people always say, hey, we got to have you guys come back. We got to have you come back. You know, later on the show, we're going to have, as a matter of fact, we're going to have Scott Osborne. He is actively involved in the Free Don Miller effort. And so, you know, Scott, after we interviewed with him and a couple of his co-hosts, Bob Green and also Steve Williams, they're also involved in the Don Miller case. You know, Scott said, hey, you guys, I got some extra time on Blog Talk. And so Scott made it possible for us to have this show in this time slot. But it is vitally important, as I stated, to use the IRP case as a case study and identify and bring attention to the problem of wrongful convictions, overcriminalization, judicial misconduct. I mean, you got situations of just flat-out miscarriage of justice. Even in the IRP, in the IRP6 case, there are portions of that case that we have even yet to start talking about. I mean, David Banks' sister, LaWanna Clark, she was wrapped up into this, and she ended up spending 6 months in federal prison under perjury charges and being convicted of perjury. We're going to dive deep into that. All of the IRP6 attended the same church as we attend that church. And, you know, the FBI, the federal prosecutor, the assistant U.S. attorney, and I'm going to go on and just start with his name now, Matthew Kirsch in Denver, Colorado, he tried to wrap the church into it as well. So, you know, when people start to see all of how this thing just got spiraled out of control, it's crazy. And so, Ethel, real quick, if you can just give us a little high level on, you know, why we had to jump into using social media, and that's working really well for us. Ethel Lopez is vice president of A Just Cause. Ethel,
absolutely,
thank you.
Sam. Thanks again for having me here. You know, we have tried, and I am kind of over a group of about 30-plus people who are reaching out as far as the media goes on social media, you know, as far as Twitter, sending emails, writing letters, Facebook, you name it, we're out there. And we kind of had to go to those extents of using social media because we could absolutely get no one within the national or the local media to look at this story. You know, we had some people that told us that, well, the national media is not going to take it because the story is not sexy enough, whatever that means. But I mean, you know, when you're looking at something like this, and in a place like Colorado, you're talking Denver, Colorado, there's about what 4 to 6% African Americans who live here, and up in Denver, Colorado, when you've got a case going where five African American, one white guy is on trial, you know, that is media worthy, and you've got, you know, the media that are right there within blocks of it. Somebody needs to take that case. So that's why we got started with this.
Okay, thanks, Ethel. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot more about that. We got a lot of things that are going to be coming up in the program and in the weeks to come. You know, Just Cause doesn't have a stable of hundreds of attorneys to take on a lot of cases. But, you know, we're actively building our network, and it is our goal to establish a Just Cause chapters all over the country. And so, you know, as we get out there, and a lot of folks are starting to understand who a Just Cause is, and so, you know, we're going to be talking about that as well. Hey, I want to let you know, if you want to dial into the show tonight, you can call us at 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Follow us on Facebook also, and then you can follow us on Twitter. We have a new Twitter account for the show. It's at AJC Radio, and then I'll give out the websites a little bit later. Later in the show, actually, as a matter of fact, when we come back from this break, we're going to just go on and bring Scott Osborne on and just going to chat with Scott a little bit. And then we're going to dive right on into the IRP Solutions case and talk about the history behind IRP Solutions. We're going to talk about the incredible software that IRP Solutions developed. And then we're going to have a segment later on in the program called the Exoneree Moment. You don't want to miss any of this right here on A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm Sam Thurman, your host.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse.
I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed a rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified,
and in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make it.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined by Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. A Just Cause Coast to Coast brings you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. You'll find us here every Thursday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, I'd like to introduce Scott Osborne to the program. Scott is an advocate of A Just Cause and a staunch supporter of the IRP6. And Scott, you made it possible for Just Cause to secure this time slot. Scott, you're also actively involved in another case called the Free Don Miller effort, and that's a tragic story in and of itself. Scott, are you there?
I am here, and welcome you guys to Contending for Truth Radio. This is exciting because it's important. I've got three nieces, and I worry about their future, and I worry about what the justice system is going to be like in 20, 30, 40 years from them. And so this is highly important.
And, you know, Scott, we were on your program, it's been about 3 weeks ago now. And so what about this this case, the IRP-6 case? I know we had an extensive, lively conversation about this subject, and we really appreciated the time that you gave us on your program at that time. And then, you know, you figured that, okay, you would have us back, but in the interim you said, no, you guys need your own time slot in order to talk about this. So, you know, what was, you know, point out a couple of things that really intrigued you about it.
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer in finding what is truth. And, you know, when we start talking about the IRP-6 or Free Don Miller, the foundation of the problem is people that don't want to stand on truth. Both cases required some lying to be involved in this. And, you know, you guys have taken a step further with a just cause. You guys' purpose is to fight injustice and to fight these insane situations. You know, this country, we went through a lot to found this country. I often go back to the summer of 1787 in Philadelphia when those men were locked in that room in that hot summer, and some of them traveled 2 or 3 weeks. And for the sole purpose of making sure we remained a free nation. And today we've got situations that are insane out there. Don Miller's story is insane. The story about these men, the IRP-6, it's insane what went on. It wasn't just a situation where you got a mistake in the judicial system. It was purposely done. It was maliciously done. You know, I often, dealing with my nieces, and this is why it gets passionate to me. In dealing with my nieces, when something happens, I always say, was it on accident or was it on purpose? Because when you do something on purpose, it totally changes the connotation. And in this story, it was done on purpose. And that's why I'm passionate about it. That's why I'm so glad you guys are able to take this time slot each week in the time slot. But after you guys are done with this show, each week we'll go to the Free Don Miller show. And it's just important, you guys.
It is. And you know, Scott, and you know that we are there for you and your crew as well to support you in any way with the Free Don Miller effort. Folks need to go out and check out that story as well. And I know, you know, when Ethel was talking about the IRP-6 case and we were kind of bouncing back and forth on there, you kind of referred to Ethel as your sister from another mother, you know.
That's
true. So, And Ethel was here with us tonight, and I know, you know, Ethel shares that sentiment as well.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's when you see this kind of thing happens, and people hear me say it all the time. I like to give this particular quote from Bishop Desmond Tutu, and basically he says that if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you've sided with the oppressor. And so, you know, that's why, you know, when someone like you, Scott, you didn't know us. You don't know, or you haven't met. You know Gary and David and Dave and Clint and Kendrick and Demetrius. You know them now by, you know, studying on the case and understanding that, you know, these are ethical businessmen, these are Christian men, they're family men, and, you know, all of those types of values are the things that you and the rest of the folks behind Free Don Miller, you know, we understand that. You know, we've established a brotherhood, and we appreciate it, Scott.
Well, and it's what it all comes down to. It really does. And, you know, I fell in love with Ethel in 5 seconds because she's got passion. And that's what it takes to accomplish this task, is a lot of passion. These guys can't do anything from behind their cell. But we out here can make a big difference. And it's little things make a big difference. I always referred to the Don Miller Show as the battery in the movement. It was a place where everybody came together each week and kept up the passion. I look at myself as an activist, but my main role is a cheerleader, helping cheer people on and helping people moving. This is a vehicle where we can encourage people to get out there and Facebook and share the story and make more and more people aware. You know, these people that are in a situation of leadership in our justice system, they often think they are a big fish in a little pond. But the more we share the story, we make them a little fish in a big pond. And one of these days they're going to wake up and go, oh, the whole country knows about this. And then it's all over with.
Absolutely. And you know,
when you look at it and you deal with the IRP6 situation, or you deal with Don Miller, and you realize so much how the public doesn't understand how easy it is for you to get wrongly convicted and be locked behind bars. And like you say, then your voice is gone. Nobody hears you. There's the preconceived notion that, well, if you're locked up, if the government came after you, prosecuted you, and convicted you, you must have been guilty. And more, as we as a just cause look into these type of situations and get feedback from the public, that's their take on the situation. Well, they wouldn't come after you for nothing. They wouldn't just, you know, if they indicted you and they went through all this and all that to prosecute you, you had to have done something wrong. And that misconception right there is what keeps the lay typical person from fighting against injustice.
That's true. So
what we want to do is to bring light to that in any situation that comes up, to say, you know, we will fight for, you know, Sam always makes a statement that the wheels of justice, you know, turn slowly. And we're starting a new slogan with A Just Cause, that the wheels of justice turn slowly until you contact A Just Cause. Yeah. We will fight for, like you say, for what's right. We'll fight for the truth. We'll fight to get those exonerated who are not guilty. It's a shame that, you know, you have like Eric Holder standing up and saying, oh, the prison system is broken. You know, it has too many people in it for too many of the wrong reasons. He makes that statement, but then he doesn't do anything about it. And that's the tragedy, is that no one is doing anything about this stuff. And we want to ensure that we and those that we align with, that we're seen as an organization, as a group, as a coalition that does something about injustice.
And also, too, I just want to say to that, you know, people as a whole need to wake up, you know, and people just go on about their everyday lives. And if something doesn't affect them directly, they're not even going to pay any attention to it. But they need to wake up and see that this could be you tomorrow. You know, you don't have to have done anything wrong, but this could be you. And we go on about our lives every day thinking that, you know, the justice system is working the way it's supposed to be working, and we rely on it and we don't pay any attention. Well, we didn't pay any attention either until this story happened to this wrongful conviction happened to these guys.
We were naive, that's,
you know,
for sure.
Absolutely. So you know, we're going to push, we're going to press, we're going to pry, we're going to knock down doors, we're going to kick down walls, we're going to do everything we can possibly do, not just for the IRP6, but for all those that reach out to us who have been wrongly convicted.
Well, Scott, we're going to, you know, we talked to you last night, and we know that you're suffering with a little bit of laryngitis, so we're going to try and help you save your voice, because you got a show that you do regularly as well. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break, and we're still going to, you know, jump in there with Steve and Bob if they dial in here in a little bit, and we'll come back and just have a quick chat with them as well. But when we come back, Scott, we're going to jump right into the IRP6 case and start talking about this story right from the beginning. Every week we're going to give bits and pieces of it. We're going to slowly but surely unfold the entire story, so that people will understand what went wrong here and how it can happen in your life as well. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. That was Scott Osborne from Contending for Truth Radio. This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart. I always forget your name, Cliff.
No problem.
And Ethel Lopez, education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back.
I was 18 and sold drugs for money. Didn't want to live on that high. Ran away with drugs in my pocket. Hoping cops would catch me. No place to go. All I wanted to do was steal drugs, collect that money, and burn. Had no hope for nothing at all. Didn't care for anything or anyone. After doing some time, I was ordered to do probation.
imagine spending 20 years of your life?
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. This is Sam Thurman, your host. Thanks for joining us tonight. A Just Cause Coast to Coast brings you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. In that previous segment, we had Scott Osborne from Contending for Truth Radio and the host of the Free the Don Miller Show, along with he hosts that show with a couple of other guys by the name of Steve Williams and Bob Green. Scott's going to hang out with us all night. And so, Scott, as you know, as we talk about this story, you can jump in there at any time. So, hey, Cliff, let's talk about IRP Solutions and what the company was about, what the goal was, and the men behind the company. I like to just say, you know, if you're out there, listeners, and you want to dial in and have a question, you can dial into the show at 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620, and that's a Just Cause Coast to Coast right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Cliff.
Okay, we want to get into a little bit about what IRP is about. And when you look at who started IRP Solution, you look at Gary Walker and how he came up with the idea of providing software for law enforcement. You know, years before IRP Solutions came into fruition, he had started another small company that he did a lot of his consulting out of, a lot of his software development. And he had joined with a guy who used to be a detective or one of the sheriffs in Colorado Springs where he lived. And he had basically asked him to build this software, you know, for the local police, saying, "Hey, Gary, there are a lot of these policemen that they spend all kind of time typing and writing, you know, filling out forms instead of having some type of software to have to basically do their work." And you know, speaking with Gary, he was explaining that that type of thing right there costs hours and hours of police work, where they should be out on the street fighting crime. They should be, you know, being more effective as far as protecting the public, serving the public. But they're spending this time filling out all of these forms by hand. And so Gary went about to help them to create some software that would basically, in essence, take away that part of their job where they had to do it by hand and computerize it. And so as that software grew, it came to the point where, you know, it outgrew what the small agencies actually would be able to use. Gary found out that the detective work that he had built the software for, that type of work wasn't done by these small agencies, these small police departments. It was done by the state-level investigative. So you have a place like the Colorado Bureau of Investigations, when these smaller agencies, when they would have an investigation, say, like for a large murder or a large drug ring or something like that, they would push that to the Bureau of Investigations locally in their state. And so when Gary started to pretty much check with the local, like Colorado Bureau of Investigations, he reached out to them and found that their need was the same as the small agencies and that they had nothing in place either that would computerize what they were doing. They were still using typewriters. They were filling out forms by hand. They would take form, you know, they take their notes while they're out in the field on the beat, while they're collecting evidence. They would take all these notes, then they would have to come in after hours, sit down in front of their typewriter and type it up on a old form, and then, you know, try to file it away. And when there was information that was needed, they would have to come back, pull up those files and go through them manually to try to get information about these cases.
Basically, what you're talking about is, like, you know, anybody that watches the cop shows, you know, it's one of those things where they just had pencil and paper.
Right, exactly.
You pull a little notepad out of your coat jacket and you start writing notes and you know, you're marking your chalk off on the ground and then you start marking measurements and that type of thing.
Right.
So the software that Gary developed basically would do all of that. And
house that information in a central database where, I mean, because like you say, if you have your little notepad, you drop that, say you drop it out in the rain, you drop it out in the snow, you had a pen that, you know, the ink is going to bleed. You've lost those notes. You've lost notes from your interview, notes from your from the evidence that you had picked up. And so you've lost a good amount of that data. And then you lay your notepad down somewhere, you know, it gets, you spill coffee on it. That data is now gone. It's missing. It's destroyed. But if you centralize it in a database, you have a software application to control that information. And then when you do your searches on it, if you say, well, hey, I need to go back. I need to see what the evidence was that I collected. I need to see who I interviewed, what I talked to them about. You can then query your computer database and find out that data and say, hey, it pertains to this case. Let's do some basically, you know, cross checks. And then you're able to find out, hey, you know, this person that I interviewed here about a murder, guess what? He was involved. He got interviewed about another murder. Why is this guy showing up around all these murders? Then you would basically say, hey, this guy may be a suspect in this area. And so that type of application, you know, that type of functionality is what Gary was building in so that, you know, the agencies could collaborate data not only inside of that one agency and case to case, but also with multiple agencies.
And you know, Cliff, one of the things, you know, after I got involved with IRP, and, you know, we like to say that the software that Gary developed would take you from the crime scene through to the courtroom. It had something for every level of an investigation. And so we're going to talk about the case investigative lifecycle software that Gary had developed as well. And so, like you said, you know, this, and as we talk about this, people, you're going to find out that something about the character of the men that we're talking about. You know, it really, you know, upsets us, and it's really atrocious when you think about a federal prosecutor, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch. You got a special agent FBI, special agent from the FBI, John Smith, and then you have the U.S. Attorney even in Denver, John Walsh, and then you have Judge Christine Arguello, all these people that are involved in this case, which we will get deeper into. But when you look at these people accusing Gary and David, Clint, Dave, Kendrick, Demetrius, you see them accusing the IRP6 of being criminals when these guys, as I stated earlier, you know, are ethical people, you know, Christian men, and had passion for their country. I mean, you got former military members of the military, whether it was in the Air Force or the Navy, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well. But when you look at this situation, and they're being called criminals, and there's nothing further from the truth. As you were just talking about that, Cliff, I was thinking about how much time Gary put into this. And I want to, you know, lay that foundation. We don't want to leave anything, no rock unturned here, because of the fact that Gary was so passionate about this particular cause that he sacrificed time with his wife. He sacrificed time with his son. He spent hours upon hours upon hours developing the software. And not only did he, like you said, at the very beginning, he had a smaller version of the software. When he realized that, okay, that doesn't necessarily accommodate the needs of the law enforcement at larger agencies, he spent more time, developed another look. And then when he found out that it didn't cut it and it needed to even be larger than that, he went to the next level. And that's where, you know, we get to the point of, you know, around the 2003 time frame when IRP was stood up and Gary started to develop the case investigative lifecycle software. Now, you know, Cliff, this is a major software solution that would help federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. You know, IRP Solutions had prospects that included the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, NYPD. I remember one trip we went on, and we called it the East Coast Suite. Flew into New York City. We checked into a hotel, put our bags down, left the hotel, went right back to the airport, and flew to Washington, D.C. And we had a meeting in Washington, D.C. We went back to New York, left New York, went to Florida. And then we had meetings in Florida, went back to New York. And so we were just, that summer, you know, we kind of referred it as, it was the Northeast blackout. And right. We were in New York for that blackout. And when you see when that blackout occurred, and I'll share this because of the fact that shows how important what IRP was doing and what Gary was working on. you know, 2003 is only a couple of years after 9/11 had occurred.
Right.
And when that happened, you saw panic like you ain't never seen. I mean, we were in Grand Central Station getting ready to get on a train to go to Albany to meet with the New York State Police. And the lights went out. We were standing at the ticket booth getting ready to buy a ticket to get a train, and the lights went out. When the lights came on, there were cops everywhere. It was like they were hiding under the rocks or something. They came out of the woodworks, but the panic set in when it stayed dark for so long. All people could reminisce on was 9/11. And that takes me to my next point. Gary was so passionate about this. On another trip to New York, we were staying in the Millennium Hilton, which is a hotel right across the street from Ground Zero. And if anyone is familiar with New York, you know that corner of Church and Day. The Millennium Hilton is right there next to St. Patrick's Cathedral. And we were on about the 60th floor of this hotel. And Gary was looking out. We were all looking out the window. This was at night. And this was prior to, you know, all the memorial and everything that's there now. In 2003, there was just still this big hole in the ground. I'm talking a very big hole in the ground. And Gary looked at this hole and he said, you know, that's why I do what I do. That's why we're developing this software. That's why we're here in New York. It was Gary's objective to ensure that another 9/11 did not occur because of the fact that, you know, there was a 9/11 commission that was established after 9/11 occurred. And the 9/11 commission came out with a report, and they basically said that our law enforcement agencies were sore lacking into being able to share information, collaborate on the information that they had, and just being able to, you know, track folks and as far as, you know, criminal types, I should say. And so this software is a major law enforcement management tool that Gary had developed. And when you think about the passion that he had for it, and when he gave up, you know, chunks of his life to ensure that another 9/11 occurred, and then he's called a criminal. I mean, you know, listeners, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and give you even more background on IRP solutions. You know, like I said, I want to give you a little bit of background on who guys are and what the company was about. And so, you know, if you want to call into the program, we're at 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. That's our call-in line. And you're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart. Education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We're talking about the IRP6 case tonight. We're also being joined by Scott Osborne of Contending for Truth Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Crime you didn't commit? Neither could I until I got the opportunity to portray Betty Ann Waters in the film Conviction, telling the real story of how she freed her brother Kenny. Sadly, what happened to Kenny happens far more often than you might expect. But together, we can stop it. Please join me in helping the Innocence Project fight injustice. Go to innocenceproject.org to make a donation and get involved.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Bonte.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile. A hug,
a shoulder, a handshake,
or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free. Get involved.
Get involved. give back now.
God bless America.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Tate. I'm Jack Scalia.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile. A hug,
a shoulder, a shake,
or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Get involved.
Give back now.
God bless America.
Welcome back to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart, my co-host, and A Just Cause Coast to Coast, bringing you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice.
Hey, Sam, we've got Stephen Williams on the line with us. I know he was checking into a hotel. You finally got settled. Stephen, you there with us?
I'm here, if you can hear me all right. I am in Chicago, checking into a hotel.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing good, fellas. Thanks for inviting me in tonight, Sam and Cliff. You guys are doing a wonderful job, and it's a great pleasure to be here, fellas.
And, you know, Steve, when we were on your show, you know, we appreciate the things that you did for us as far as helping to get the story out about the IRP-6 and a just cause. You know, all the things that you and Scott and Bob are doing for Don Miller, you know, it just sets a good example of what needs to happen as far as when we're talking about these kind of things. And I don't know, Cliff, is Scott still there?
Yeah, let me bring him on. Hey, Scott, you with us?
I'm right here.
Okay, yeah. Hey, Scott, we got Steve on now as well. So, Steve, you know, one of the things that we were talking to Scott about earlier as well is, you know, how it takes efforts just like all of this and us banding together. And I was telling Scott that, you know, we're there to support you guys just as you are there supporting us. You know, we would love to do anything we can to help you. And Steve, you know, some of the things that stood out to you as far as the atrocities with the IRP-6 case, the things that you're dealing with Don Miller, you know, share that with some of our listeners. It means a lot to understand that when we're talking about IRP-6 and when you guys are talking about Don Miller, we're not talking in a vacuum. These are issues that they're real issues that people need to take into consideration.
Well, you know, on the Don Miller stuff, you know, I was, you know, shocked that this could happen in a little town that I grew up in and that I love this area, to hear about the Don Miller case. And when I first saw it, I saw it in the back of a newspaper of a website being advertised. And it was freemyfather.net. And I'm like, well, what in the world is this all about? It said Anatomy of a Wrongful Conviction. So I wrote it down, and as soon as I got home that night, I looked into it and was absolutely flabbergasted, and to this day I'm flabbergasted because that ad runs in the paper every single day, and I saw it back in 2005, and I was floored that this could happen in such a local level like this. And then when I met you gentlemen, and you guys educated me on what's going on with the IRP-6, that night that you guys were on the Underground Hard Drive, and you guys just carried that show, and I listened and I re-listened to that show, and I was absolutely flabbergasted. And I sat there and said, you know, on the Don Miller thing, that's a county, basically a statewide deal. And I look at the Free the IRP-6 IRP-6 situation, and that's a national deal. And it blows me away, fellas, that something like this could be hidden by and covered up by such an even larger audience than what we're dealing with on the Don Miller thing. It's an absolute atrocity.
Well, you know, Steve, whether something like this happens at the county level, at the city level, at the state level, at the federal level, or even, you know, internationally, regardless of what level it happens, it's wrong.
You bet.
That's why it takes your voice, it takes my voice, Cliff, Ethel, Scott, it takes all of us, the many voices that are out there, you know, banding together. We will draw attention to this kind of thing. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we were told at one time it takes a grassroots effort. We need a groundswell. And so when folks start to realize that this can happen to you, and we always say that, this can happen to you, then that's when their eyes will be open. We were all naive to this kind of thing until we found ourselves right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And you know what, Stephen, just like you said, when you first saw this, it was on the back of, you know, in a newspaper ad, and someone was saying, you know, help free my dad. And that's what we want the listeners to understand. It's not just the guys that are locked up. It's not just Don Miller that's affected. It's not just the IRP6 that's affected. But it's their entire families, their entire community,
all of
their friends. Yep. You know, you have these small children, these young children.
Yep.
And then all the way up, like in the IRP6 case, we got one son that's 21, and then we have all the way down to one of the kids that's 7, 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do is not only make them understand that, hey, it's going to be okay, and we're fighting for your father, but how do we take these other young men and young women that are 21 years old, and they're looking at their country saying, my country wrongfully incarcerated my father. How do we keep them from becoming bitter? How do we keep them from feeling like, well, I'll throw the baby out with the bathwater because they did my dad wrong. They're doing my family wrong. All I see about the system is wrong. So we have to raise these kids and these families to make them understand that, hey, you know, we got some good things to fight for in the country, to fight with, but we also have to teach them that fight against the wrong, fight against what's wrong. Take your anger and you know, basically turn it in that direction, but to try to give them some type of something that says, hey, you know, don't be bitter against the system, but help fight against the wrong part of it.
You're exactly right. And you know what's sad is the fact that in the Don Miller case, and this was like somebody kicking me right in the stomach. And I was talking to my cousin and his wife one day about this, and believe it or not, my cousin is actually cousins with Don Miller on his other side of the family.
Wow.
And he is a cop in the area, but what struck me is that his wife said to me, you're obsessed with this case. And I said, obsessed? I'm like, what do you mean obsessed? She goes, you're out of your mind and on this case and blah, 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 blah. And I said, doesn't this case bother you? She goes, absolutely not. She says, it doesn't affect my everyday life, and so I'm not going to worry about it. I said, are you kidding me? I said, that's the problem.
Yeah. Exactly. See, it's one of those things where you find complacency, if you will, from the standpoint that if it's not impacting me, if it's not affecting me in my daily life, if it's not affecting my family, then, you know, out of sight, out of mind, so to speak. And
exactly.
That's the kind of thing that we cannot allow to happen. I think that's why sometimes it's difficult to draw attention to these types of situations. That along with fear. You know, people think, well, if I get involved, then, you know, that's going to draw attention to myself and someone else is going to, you know, maybe they're going to look into me and fabricate something about me and my family, and then I'm going to find myself in that situation. You know, Cliff and I, we're in a particularly unique situation in the sense that we get asked questions as to, well, if you guys worked at IRP Solutions, why aren't you incarcerated with the rest of the guys? And, you know, we answer that question by saying, you know, part of it is divine intervention. I mean, you know, we look at it and we say, you know, we were left for a reason because of the fact that, as you guys know, when people go to prison, the system is designed to keep them quiet. The system is designed to ensure that they don't have a voice. And then the so-called tools that they have as far as a library and so forth to be able to put together their appeals and everything, it's not even up to date. So, you know, they don't have the resources available, and they certainly don't have the means by which to get out on radio and share their story. So when we who know what's going on have a platform, and that's so appreciative of you, Scott and Steve and Bob, if you're out there listening, we're so appreciative of you for supporting the IRP6 and a Just Cause, because of the fact that, you know, we have done many, many shows all over the country on radio, but to have our own platform and to be able to share every aspect of this story and then be able to invite folks like yourself on to share a little bit of your story and just compare notes, so to speak, that means the world to a Just Cause. That means the world to the IRP6. I mean, we meet with them every week, and just to share with them the kind of stuff that they're getting, you know, again, I have to say on behalf of those guys, we really appreciate it.
Right, and just to add to that, you know, when we talk to them every weekend, we go down there and we're with their families and we sit with them and share and laugh, and we get a chance to tell them, hey, this is who we talked to this week. This is whose show we went on. This is what their feedback was, and it brings them great joy to hear that, you know, it's not only us that realize that they're innocent, that they've been wrongfully convicted. It's not only us that know that this type of thing happens, but for them to understand and to know that there's other people out there that believe in what they did, that believe in the fact that, you know, when the evidence is seen in this case, that this is not a criminal case. And I'm sure it's the same thing with Don Miller, that when he knows that you guys are out there fighting for him, that he can stick his chest out and say, hey, you know, my voice might not be being heard at this point, but there's people out there, there are men out there who love me and care for me, who are watching over my family, and who are fighting just as hard for me as if it was one of their very own. And that's very much appreciated.
You're listening to it. It's Coast to Coast. If you'd like to call in and ask a question of Scott or Steve or me and Cliff, the number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. I'll say it again. They told me I'm talking a little fast on that one. So the phone number for dialing into the show, 347-205-9620. We're talking with Steve Williams, Scott Osborne, Contending for Truth Radio. They're joining us here on a Just Cause Coast to Coast as we talk about IRP6 back in a couple of minutes.
Religion.
Or prohibiting the free exercise.
Of.
Or abridging the freedom of speech.
Or of the press.
Or the right.
Of the people. Peaceably.
To assemble. And to petition.
The government.
For a redress of grievances.
Justice must be free. told you, Mr. Pastor Rose M. Banks. He's on the front line. On the front line.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. This is Sam Thurman, your host. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, bringing you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. We're talking about the IRP 6 case. And also joining us on the phone, the Scott Osborne and Stephen Williams from Contending for Truth Radio. They're involved in the Free Don Miller effort. And they join us tonight on our first show here on Thursday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk. And Steve, we were just talking about, you know, notes, so to speak, between Don Miller and the IRP 6 situation. And Ethel, she had something we were talking during the break. And so, Ethel, what was that point you were making?
Yeah, I was looking back. First, let me just say to Scott, hello, Scott. Thank you for those kind words, and I love you, too. This is your sister from another mother. Okay, but anyway, as far as the media goes, and you were talking about people not wanting to get involved and stuff because, you know, they will be looked at closely or be scrutinized and so forth. Well, I think you have that kind of a same situation when it comes to the mainstream media. You know, there are just certain things like when you say FBI, when you say talking about race and stuff like that, they don't want to get involved. You know, they want to stand back. You know, no, I can't do anything about that. You know, because I actually had what's her name talk to me from PBS, Miss Eilif, who told me, you know, when I sent her the story, well, you mentioned the word race too many times. Well, if race is the issue, then race is the issue. So that's why they didn't want to take the story. You know, so I was looking at earlier today, and it was talking about how big businesses actually run government and the media. And I really look at that, and I believe there's a whole lot of truth to that. And that is a lot of the reason why they don't want to get involved with stories such as this.
And also, Ethel, you know, as Scott alluded to before, that they don't want to deal with the truth. They don't want to go out and say, okay, this is truthfully what happened. This is truthfully what's going on in America. This is truthfully what's going on in the government. They don't want to deal with that part. And that issue right there really is what it all boils down to. You know, you're supposed to say the truth is always with us, and we always appreciate what's the truth because it's the thing that is going to tear down what's not the truth. It's what's going to destroy the lie. It's what's going to bring everything about that is right and good. But you find in the media, you find in these federal agencies that we've been to, some of them, and then you find, some of the people that we've reached out to, you find at Eric Holder's office, you find all over the government. Yep. They don't want to deal with what is truth. They don't want to deal with the fact that, hey, the system is not perfect. Everybody says that. Well, the system's not perfect, but it's the best. How about dealing with the fact that maybe it's not the best? Maybe the system is prosecuting too many innocent people. Maybe the fact that America has more people in prison than any other country in the world, why is that? How is that the fact? How is that the case? But they don't want to deal with that. They don't want to look at it. Raw ugliness that is, you know, peel the scab back on the sore. Let's get some ointment in there so we can fix the problem.
And, you know, at all levels, and like you were saying, Steve, earlier, that, you know, the Free Don Miller case is not at the level of the national peak as like the IRP 6. But, you know, as Cook saying, that you got Attorney General Eric Holder, and he was speaking before the the ABA, in August in Francisco. And he was saying that there are far too many people going to prison for no real law enforcement reason. And that although he respects the system is broken. So all the things that we're talking about right now, yeah, people will acknowledge that there are problems. People will acknowledge that the system needs to be fixed. But no one is doing anything. That's why it's so important that we continue to stay in the fight. So I know, Steve, you got to get ready for another show here shortly. How much time do you have to be with?
I've got a little bit left here. I can spend a little bit more time with you guys. But you guys are absolutely right, and everybody needs to get together on this. And the people that listen to these shows have got to understand that they are a voice as well. So when we post something to Facebook or to the internet or these shows and stuff like that, and these people have the ability, they just don't realize it, just by sharing the show or sharing a news article or something like that is help spreading the word. Just liking the post or liking the show on Facebook it's nice to see the like, but it's not spreading it out to your news feed as well. And that's why I say, if you got five people that share it to five people and five people that keep spreading, think of what kind of word you can get out there and the message that you can get out there and get this out to people. And it's just, this day and age of technology is just amazing, but people have got to get together and realize that there is a serious problem in this country. One innocent man in prison is one too many. People have to get together and get this right.
And, one of the followers of A Just Cause, that's actually their name. It's One Day is Too Many. And so that's one of those things where when you talk about folks that are wrongly convicted, folks that are wrongly incarcerated, and when you sit in a courtroom and see how things transpire, it's just crazy. I mean, in the IRP6 case, and we'll talk a lot about, one of the things that's going on in that case is a transcript that's missing. You got a situation where the judge violates the Fifth Amendment right of the guys. She has this sidebar. She makes them take the stand. And then when they realize that that's what happened, they request a transcript of it. And the judge basically says, I'm not going to give you that transcript. And so, we just did a quick analysis over the last few days of the actual other transcripts of the other proceedings of that case, of the IRP6 case, in the closing days of it. And the judge basically says, and she's having this conversation with the court reporter, and the court reporter says that there are 200 pages, actually says there are over 200 pages that are not part of the transcript. And the judge says that there is no reason to provide those pages, and she was not going to expedite it, and she was not going to make the unedited version available to the defendants. How can you put forth a solid appeal if you don't have all the information? How can a judge have that power to withhold information that is important to your case? Scott and Steve, that's crazy.
And then the worst part of that is when you look at a judge does that, who holds her feet to the fire? Who comes back and says, this is wrong, you shouldn't have done this? And then when they do, what type of retribution is there that will go to her? How long will she spend in prison when the judge that convicted Don Miller, the judge that convicted the IRP6 and gave them their sentences, when they do this stuff wrong, how long do they get put in prison when it's found that, you would men need for their appeal? How long does she spend in prison when it's all said and done? Who is she accountable to? And as a Just Cause, when we're doing our research and looking into the background on how is a judge held accountable, how's a prosecutor held accountable, you see that basically they get a slap on the wrist at the very most. We have one case that one of our researchers found that a judge was found to have done egregious acts, basically broke the law, caused people prison, and what was the retribution? A fine for $700. At first it was $500. Then the Supreme Court came back and said that fine is not steep enough. We'll fine this judge $700 to really make it hurt. Yeah, that really does it. That really gives the public to say, hey, does something wrong, then they're really held accountable, right?
That's less than a day's pay for
exactly.
a judge.
Exactly.
But, only that, my God, they can impeach the president, but they can't get rid of a federal judge.
Exactly.
Something is wrong with that picture.
That's another flawed system. If you can't hold a judge accountable, there's another flaw right there in our system. Because exactly. These judges get a godlike complex and think that they're higher than any other authority out there, which is totally wrong.
And what you just said is so true. When she tells the defendants, I've got your lives in my hand, oh, you just nailed it. You just nailed it.
And we need the public to fight, help us in the fight. And like you said, you don't just say, okay, I like your Facebook page or I followed you on Twitter. No, retweet the information.
Yep.
Retweet the show. Take it. Push it out there. When you get a copy of the link, don't just accept it. Pass it on to everybody that's following you. And if everybody does that, see, that's the thing with the truth. The Bible says that you can't do anything against it. So as long as you put it out there, it continues to go on its own course. It continues to stay strong, but it has to be out there. You cannot just lay it in the street and expect for it to do. You have to pick it up. You have to pass it on. You have to give it to the next person and say, hey, here's the truth. I'm just putting it in your hand. It's going to do its job. It will work, but you have to give it to the next person.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I just have a couple of questions for you guys and then a couple of comments, and then I will catch the archive show to listen to the whole show again. But I when you guys were on the show last time on my show, it was, like I said earlier, you educated me in a major, major way on this case and stuff. And I got a piece of information here not too long ago that somebody, and I wanted to get you guys back on to talk about it, but maybe you can talk about it here, explain it a little bit here, and maybe you already have, but somebody of a little bit of, I guess, a power or whatever, not power, but the ability to help pass this along and maybe do something with it has joined the team. A certain lawyer, is that true?
Yes, that is true, Steve. We have Mark Gergos. He's the attorney out of Los Angeles. And, you know, most folks are familiar with Gergos. And, you know, when we presented this case to Mark, we actually flew out to L.A. and sat down and talked with him about it. And he and a couple of his associates reviewed it. And, you know, they see where – and they're specifically joined the case with regard to the missing transcript. Because it makes absolutely no sense to him either. You know, how can a judge do this? How can a court reporter who is obligated by law, by the Court Reporters Act, to maintain or the court records and transcripts are supposed to be maintained for 10 years so that anybody off the street can go in and review those court records. Those records that we're talking about that are missing, that should be made available, and the court reporter and the judge should be held accountable. When you have a court reporter that's saying, I'm not going to give them over, and then you have a judge that is not going to enforce the fact that they should be handed over, you know, how many ways can you spell corruption?
Exactly. I mean, and we went on a campaign against, you know, Judge Christine Arguello and against this court reporter, Darlene Martinez. We went to Washington, D.C., didn't just make calls, went to the Office of Professional Responsibility of Internal Governance and said, hey, who holds Judge Arguello accountable to say these 200 pages of this transcript that you, in open court, said you're not going to release? Who holds Judge Arguello accountable? Who holds Darlene Martinez, the court reporter, accountable when she's breaking the law, violating the Court Reporters Act? Everywhere we went, they kept saying it's not under our jurisdiction, not under our jurisdiction. Well, we ended up going to the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Denver, Colorado. John Walsh is the U.S. Attorney here in Denver. We go to him and say, hey, Johnny, we need to know what you're going to do about the fact that this court reporter has not released this entire transcript. Just Cause paid her to do it as an independent contractor. We need her to release the rest of the information. What does he tell us? Well, sue her. There's nothing we can do. It's not under our jurisdiction. Sue her. You know, you paid money for it. You Just Cause paid about $10,000 for the whole transcript. She didn't deliver it to you. Sue her in civil court. We take him up on that. We sue her at the state level saying she breached a contract for not providing what she was paid for. And you They, like I said, the attorney, the U.S. Attorney's Office says she's not under our jurisdiction. There's nothing we can do to her. She was acting as an independent contractor. That's not under federal jurisdiction. There's nothing we can do. Well, when we do the lawsuit in state court, who comes to her rest but the U.S. Attorney's Office and says, now we're going to bring her under our umbrella, and they're representing her in this case and saying, well, no, she was acting as a federal court reporter. Well, you just said she wasn't. Before we sued her, you said she wasn't acting under anything that you had jurisdiction over, and suddenly now you're representing her. Now, you tell me the federal government has ever come in to protect any citizen of the United States and say, I'm going to represent you with the whole arm of the law to ensure that these people who are trying to sue you are not, you know, are basically not successful. So they're bringing her in, hiding her under their umbrella, covering for Judge Christine Arguello, and we as a just cause are like, what is this? And like Sam mentioned, that's why Mark Garagos has come on to say, hey, you guys, give us something here. You got to make it at least make sense when you're a crook.
And you know, Steve, I'm going to read you just an excerpt from the motion that Mr. Garagos and team put together and just filed on behalf of this case as well. He says in a part of this motion, he says, Ms. Martinez's wrongful conduct resulted in excessive delays and a failure to produce a complete and accurate transcript of the underlying trial proceedings, talking about the IRP6 case. Because of delays and the omissions of the transcript which was produced, the criminal defendants, again the IRP6, in the underlying action have suffered substantial damages and they've been deprived of their constitutional due process. I know you guys are constitutional, the Constitution and constitutional due process. He says they have been deprived of their constitutional due process. How can a judge, a single person, you know, breathing, just walking around like you and I, and like Ethel said a moment ago, she makes these comments about, I have your life in my hands. Well, you don't have the right to trample on someone else's constitutional rights, though.
Mm-hmm. And when did he file that motion already?
That motion has been filed.
That's sweet. And when will that, do you think, do they have a time frame on when they have to respond to that motion?
Yeah, and you know, that actual timetable, I'm not exactly sure on that timetable, Steve, but I'll check that. I know you want to, like we say here on the show, we're here to educate and bring awareness and provide information. So we will get that information for you as to how much time it takes to for a prosecution at the federal level to reply to a motion. We'll get that information for you.
That sounds good. You know, and the thing is, you know, when she makes that comment, I hold your life in my hand or whatever the exact comment was, I mean, if people don't see that, that's red flags being thrown all over the field right there. I mean, that should definitely throw some red flags and get some people questioning it. But just a couple of things before I go, folks. I did get a chance to stop and see Don Miller last night as I was coming through southern Wisconsin. I stopped to see him a little bit, and we talked a little bit about the IRP6, and he was familiar, and people have been telling him about the case as well. So his thoughts and prayers are with them as well, and I appreciate everything that you folks are doing, and man, I admire every single one of you, and I just wish more people would get involved like all of you have and Scott has, and just spreading the word and getting the word out there, because it's people like you that are going to help right these wrongs, and there's so many wrongs out there, and I admire what you guys are doing, and I look forward to getting you guys back on my show sometime as well.
Hey, we'll do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, it'll be our pleasure.
You know, the sentiment is the same here as well. You know, we appreciate what you're saying, Steve, but, you know, it's people like you, you know, people like Scott. You know, it's all of us working together, all of us banding together. You know, the next time you meet with Don, the next time you talk to him or you know, if you talk to him on the phone or well, please tell him that our prayers are with him as well. You know, we will always try on our end to keep his name out there as well. You know, I know every time I'm out on Twitter, you know, I'm tweeting about Don Miller as well as IRP6, because you guys open the door for us. You open the door for the IRP6 family, and, you know, we have to do what we have to do in order to help each other out. So, yep. Steve, good luck on your show tonight. And,
all right. Thank you, folks, and keep up fighting the fight, and God bless you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks okay. so much.
Thank you.
Take
this
care.
This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We just had Steve Williams on with Free Don Miller, and also had Scott Osborne on. When we come back, we're going to dive into a little bit more of the IRP6 story. If you'd like to call in, we'll take callers at 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. A Just Cause Coast to Coast. We'll be right back after this. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined by Cliff Stewart, my co-host. And then we also have a vice president from A Just Cause, Ethel Lopez. And on the phone, we have Scott Osborne from Contending for Truth. Thanks for joining the program, everyone, tonight. We're talking about the IRP6 case and also Don Miller and Free Don Miller, and how these types of things, as far as over-criminalization and wrongful convictions, how they impact our lives and how they impact the lives of the families around us. The song that you heard just during the break, that song was actually written by the daughter of Clinton Stewart, one of the IRP6, and joining Cliff's son actually wrote it as well. So that was one of the things that, you know, we wanted to put that out there. That, you know, when this thing impacts families, it's just incredible. I mean, with the public on reaching out on behalf of IRP6, reaching out on behalf of A Just Cause, and
right.
and you see, and you like to share a lot of times, and we really appreciate the things that you do when you talk about, you know, how this thing impacts families, and so, you know, share a little bit about that with us.
Well, you know, I've reached out to different people and trying to get, you know, some get them to understand, you know, what's going on with these families that have been impacted by the wrongful conviction of the IRP6. We've had several other radio shows these families on to talk about and discuss how they feel about the situation and what has occurred. And I listen to them every single time, and my heart breaks. You know, when I hear the stories of their children and the things that they go through with their fathers being incarcerated wrongly, and they don't know how to explain it to these small kids, you know? And so that's something that we want the public to understand. There are so many young children out there that are going through the exact same thing that these families are having to deal with. And when they were wrongly convicted, The judge that Christine or that the pickle faced Christine Arguello, the federal judge in Denver, Colorado, did not one time take into consideration how this was going to affect these families and these small children. You know, one of the guys, Clint Stewart, he was a single parent. His daughter was 17 years old. This jackass judge didn't take into consideration not one time what was going to happen to this man's daughter. You know, until other families of the other guys stepped in, and because what could have happened to her? I mean, you can imagine in your own mind a 17-year-old being on the streets by herself. You know, anything could have happened to her, anything. And if we're just looking at the kids that are in this situation, what about the ones that are in so many other wrongful conviction cases that are in the same situation?
You know, like Cliff said earlier, when a man or woman, I mean, because the injustice, the wrongful conviction, the overcriminalization, the mass incarceration, you know, it affects men as well as women. And so, you know, their fathers are gone, their mothers are gone, and it's just one of those things where, again, their voices are not heard.
Yeah.
And it's important for organizations like A Just Cause to be there because these folks, you know, like you said, in the situation with Clint, I thought immediately, you know, what's going to happen to Tiff?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that you have a young teenager, except for the fact that there is a strong support system in place to step in and say, okay, you have a place to live. You have someone that's going to help provide for your meals.
Right.
You have someone that's going to give you some guidance.
Right.
Otherwise, she could have ended up in a shelter.
Yeah.
She could have been some pimp's prostitute.
That's
you know,
right.
She could have been out selling her body in order to make a living so that she could just survive.
Yeah.
None of that was taken into consideration in the IRP6 case. You have six gentlemen who were not criminals. You have six gentlemen who did not have a criminal record.
Right.
We're going to dive into all of that in the weeks to come because of the fact that even, like I said at the top of the show, when you look at LaWanna Clark, that's another part in this web as far as this case is concerned. She didn't have a criminal record. She's the sister of David Banks. She was sent. They're trying to send some sort of message. I remember we did a video series that was aired on some of the public broadcast stations. Kendrick Barnes, one of the IRP6, it always sticks with me because he basically reflected on something that Judge Arguello stated when she said that, you know, I'm going to send a message. And Kendrick reflects on that and he says, well, what kind of message is that? You do the right things and you do everything you're supposed to do and you get locked up? You know, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
That is a problem. That's why we need judicial reform. That's why we need to hold judges and prosecutors accountable. If folks would go out onto the Just Cause website, we have a link to change.org where we actually have a petition where you can sign and to bring about that kind of change. We want to hold people accountable. I mean, these folks should not get a free a buy on doing wrong. And I know, Ethel, you are one of the main players in a telephone campaign to the Attorney General's office. How's that going?
You know what? He sucks, too. I mean, just to be plain, honest, he sucks, too. You know, reference to him. And they're now trying to hold him accountable for the lies that he told with the Fast and Furious situation there. And my thing is, this man is so busy covering up his own lies, his own screw up, his own crap. He don't have time to help anybody else, you know. But we've been knocking on this man's door for over a year, and we're talking about Attorney General Eric Holder. We have been knocking on his door, ringing his phones off the hook on a daily basis. Now there's over 30 plus of us that have been doing this. So you can imagine how many phone calls they get into that office. Call one time. We talk to I don't know how many different people. They run us around and send us and transfer us to all different areas. We've called the criminal division. We've called the civil rights division. They got to the point where they know my name, and I don't really care. They know my voice when I call. I don't really care. I am still calling your jackass because from what I've been told, Eric Holder is the one that's supposed to reach out and investigate such a situation.
That's right.
And if he's not going to do it, then you pick up that telephone and you call us and you tell us who's supposed to do it.
That's right. And, you know, Ethel, that's one of the things, like Cliff was saying, you know, we have gone from federal agency to federal agency to someone should be responsible for investigating the types of things that have occurred in the federal court in Denver with regard to the IRP-6. You know, and the thing that we found is that it was almost like the thing of, you know, remember the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers, where they, and some of you might not be old enough to remember this, but it's some of the old black and white TV, and they'd be pointing the fingers the other way. It's like,
exactly.
not my responsibility, it's this guy, you know.
Exactly.
And we've run into that so much in this situation where, you know, you get a form letter back from a saying that it's not their responsibility. And no one signs the letter.
Exactly.
So you don't even know who to call to say, okay, you just sent me this letter. Now explain to me, who am I supposed to be reaching out to in order to move it to the next level?
But that's because nobody wants to be held accountable. You know, they don't want you to have a name that I can call and ask for this particular person. They don't want that. But I tell you what, by the time they get done with those phone calls coming in, everyone in Eric Holder's office is going to need a hearing aid.
And you know, one of the things, you know, they've heard, the listeners have heard us talking quite a bit. And Cliff and I gave you just a little bit of a tidbit of the background on the company. So let's dive into that a little bit, Cliff. And you know, we'll set the stage for some of the follow-on shows. You know, folks who are listening may say, well, who are the IRP-6? You know, the IRP-6, they're IT professionals. These guys are currently incarcerated in federal prison. Get that, federal prison in Colorado. They were accused and convicted of mail and wire fraud. The IRP-6, they were executives in an IT startup company called IRP Solutions Corporation. IRP started in February 2000. He was marketing a major law enforcement software called Case Investigative Lifecycle Software. We commonly refer to it as SILC, C-I-L-C. And so remember that. We'll be talking about it from time to time. Okay, so they were developing SILC. This software was for major federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies so that they could better manage investigations. The prospects for IRP Solutions included the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, New York City Police Department, and others. The IRP executives, because I was one of the executives, we were convinced that we were on the verge of closing business because these major government agencies were engaging IRP Solutions in all types of serious conversations. We flew to Washington, D.C. for not just one demo. We went there for several demos to show our software. Now, what happened is that we were marketing software just like any other company markets, you know, their product. We get a phone call from the Department of Homeland Security. I'll say that again. We got a phone call from the Department of Homeland Security. The voice on the other end was by Stephen Cooper. Stephen Cooper was working on a project that was basically going to be answering the mail that the 9/11 Commission report had said that the federal government needed to put some things in place whereby federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies could collaborate information, share information, and so forth. We flew to Washington, D.C., put on a demo. I always say that Gary and David hit it out of the park. Gary is just a straight-up genius when it comes to developing software. Folks would always ask Gary and David and a couple of the others, hey, were you ever in law enforcement because of the fact that the software was so conducive to business? So, you know, we aren't talking a bunch of dummies and, you know, law enforcement, prosecution, and investigation for dummies. This was law enforcement investigations management done at the world-class level, and Gary was right behind all of that. In this meeting in the summer and fall of 2003, were FBI, the Secret Service, the Federal Air Marshals, the TSA, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement folks. You had some other folks there that were there. I kind of refer to it as the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement. It was everybody was there. We expected to go there and maybe have a demo with a couple of the people that we had spoken to on the phone. And you get to this room and you got, you know, 25, 30 people sitting in there representing all these different agencies. I always say that Gary and David hit it out of the park because the Department of Homeland Security was so impressed by what they saw, because you have other major defense contractors that come in there. And they do demos and so forth. And how do you refer to it, Cliff? They do smoke and mirrors and stuff like that?
Smoke and mirrors. You know, they come in and they say, well, we've got this PowerPoint slideshow. And this is, you give us 400, and this is what we can build for the government. This is what it'll do. This is what it'll look like. This is how it'll integrate into your system. They bring in this picture. It's not even a pretty picture. You know, it's a weak, cheap, you know, sorry picture of what they think they'll be able to do. And then at the end of it, they get the government to pay them all this money, and then they deliver absolutely nothing. You look at the virtual case file that was supposed to be built by SAIC, that in 2005, Dr. Mueller, he had to stand in front of Congress to say why his agency squandered $425 million on this virtual case file software. And the reason is because these companies, they go to the federal government, they have their lobbyists, they have, you know, basically their large checkbook, and they say, hey, there's a half a billion dollars on the table. We need to go in here and get you guys to get us in the front door so we can get this check. They go in, put on this show of paperwork, and then deliver absolutely nothing, but they walk away with $500 million, and then while the taxpayer is left with absolutely nothing. And none of the people from SAIC were indicted. None of them were prosecuted for mail fraud or wire fraud or conspiracy or racketeering. None of that happened to them. What happened? They got another round of funding, but they would come in with these smoke and mirrors and have absolutely nothing to show. And then when IRP comes in and, you know, says, hey, we actually have software. This is what it is now. This is how we can customize it. This is how we can modify it to meet your needs. And then, well, go prove that you can do that. And then you guys come back and in a few weeks go back before them and say, hey, this is what you requested last time. Well, guess what? Now it's part of the software. And that's where the great value comes in. And that's where you realize that, you know, Gary had a best-in-class solution. And like you said, you know, he's a genius, and he taught us to develop that way, because I was one of the developers on the software. He taught us this is how you do it to get it done right. This is how you build software to be successful and usable.
And, you know, Cliff, one of the things I like to point out is when we're talking about this, you get that feeling that, you know, listeners may say, well, sure, they were a part of IRP. They are a part of a just cause. They're trying to get the IRP 6 off. You know, so they're going to say everything, kind of spin this story to make it sound like, you know, the IRP 6 did nothing wrong. And yeah, right, a startup company had a audience with the federal government. Well, that was because, like you said, you know, IRP Solutions was doing it right. And the federal government at that time, I mean, they realized that, hey, here's a company that knows how to do it. There was an article that was in Fierce. It was just a year ago, Jack Israel. He was a former chief technology officer for the FBI. Now, Mr. Israel, he was discussing the challenges and feats and failures of the Sentinel Project, what you were just talking about, where they just squandered $1 billion between the Virtual Case File Project and the Sentinel Project. This article says that in 2005, the FBI launched the Sentinel Project to modernize their case management system, which is right there in line with what IRP was doing. They launched this project to modernize their case management system after the $1 billion Virtual Case File Project by SAIC in 2004. Now, Lockheed Martin was awarded the Sentinel Project, which ended up costing taxpayers another $825 million. Now, you look at this, and it says that the Sentinel Project, according to Israel, started unraveling. And then that's when the Bureau tried to build an independent electronic case management system. You know, Cliff, I don't know about you. I don't care what nobody thinks out there as far as thinking that we're a bunch of conspiracy theorists and that there's no – and that, yeah, IRP Solutions was right in there with the federal government to provide a solution. Well, I don't think there's no coincidence that IRP Solutions was getting calls in 2004 for a solution that was failing and the government had already spent over $1 billion. What do you think about that?
And when you look at it, you know, they can say what they will. And I always say, well, you know, go to the evidence. We have all the evidence. We have documentation. We have court documents. We have everything that you would want to see that says what we're talking about is not conspiracy. It's a conspiracy.
Well, who's committing that conspiracy?
Right, exactly. It's a conspiracy on the part of the national government. And you were just reading about these different, you know, the failure of the Virtual Case File and the Sentinel Project. And see, they try to make it like, oh, no, the Sentinel Project, that was delivered. The FBI is a failure. And when you look at the report, there is a report. It's called the Interim Report on FBI Implementation of Sentinel. And we'll have that posted up on the Free the IRP6 website by the end of the night. I'm going to read an excerpt from what that report said. And this it was done by the OIG. They checked on
it
and said,
Office of the Inspector General.
Right, Office of Inspector General.
Right.
What's going on with this Sentinel Project that you spent this money on? And this is one of the excerpts. It says, a Sentinel Project official who briefed the OIG on the department's July 2012 report to Congress told us that Go Live, which the FBI defines as Sentinel's final operating capability available to users, was initiated on May 29, 2012, when the system contained current operational information. This Sentinel Project official said that the FBI had to consider a number of instances the deployment of the system had to be put on hold due to operational concerns where there may be a heightened threat to national security.
So now, in everyday language, Cliff,
in
now
everyday
we're IT professionals.
Right, we're IT
professionals. Know what that means.
In everyday language.
So what does that mean?
This is saying the Sentinel Project is a piece of crap. We
it
don't
is.
Accept it for
it's
what the
failure.
FBI says it is. It is a failure. We spent $1.3 billion, and guess what? This, all the letters you're seeing from the FBI are fluff and crap to try to get the American people to accept the fact that another $1.4 billion that is nothing. I mean, all these words they're using, just say it's a piece of crap. Deal with the truth.
And put it out there. And just like the large defense agencies go before Congress, go before these other federal agencies and do the smoke and mirror thing, that's exactly what, you know, the federal agencies do to the public. You know, they use this flowery language
exactly.
And stuff like that, and they think that the common man is not going to know, and they try and make it seem as though, hey, we got stuff that's working. You know, I saw, and I'm going to pull it up here in a minute, but I saw an article today. As a matter of fact, I have it right here. Folks are terrified. This article was published, like, today, as a matter of fact. This says that there is an internal memo that warns terrorists may be doing dry runs to prepare for the next 9/11 style attack. Did you hear me? They're doing dry runs. They had a situation on an airline that it was going from Washington, D.C., I believe, to Florida. There were some some nationals who were on this plane, and they started making a ruckus. They were going up and down the hallways. Or the people were getting nervous. Now, the TSA tried to downplay it. Now, just like in the IRP-6 case where folks trying to make people shut up and not talk about it and everything else, well, you have a federal air marshal that they don't even want him to talk about it. But he's come out. They haven't named him, but he's come out and he said, oh, the TSA is trying to downplay this thing. No, this is very real. This is a serious situation. It says here that a horrifying internal memo obtained by WTSP-TV reportedly details an incident which some pilots terrorists plotting against another 9/11 style attack. Delta Airlines pilot Wolf Koch told the news station that it was very foolish to believe that an attack similar to the one that occurred on 9/11 could ever happen again. In that attack, the deadliest air on American soil, more than 3,000 people were killed. And that goes back to what I was saying as far as, you know, Gary saying that he didn't want this kind of thing to happen again. In fact, Koch and other flight crews are worried that the terrorists are already planning future attacks. The memo was obtained by this team. It originated at the union which represents pilots for U.S. Airways. And it says that there have been several cases recently throughout the airline industry of what appears to be probes or dry runs to test our procedures and reaction to the flight threat. This thing says that what most experts would tell you is that the dry run is occurring and that the attack will shortly follow. A September 2nd flight from Washington, D.C. to Orlando International is the most recent, quote, dry run that pilots are aware of. According to the crew members, 4 minutes after takeoff, witnesses say the men got up from their seat, they ran toward the flight deck door, then they made unexpected left turns and entered into the bathroom. They stayed in the bathroom for a long time. A couple of the other ones got up, made another scene, and they started going into the overhead bins. Tell me, Cliff, if that's not someone just trying to test to see what's... Now, you know, shortly after 9/11, we were doing a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. And because of the business that IRP is in and because of the business that we were doing and because of the folks that we were exposed to, you know, we were around agents all the time. We were getting on planes and we could. I mean, we knew them just, I mean, they needed to do a better job of cover. But we even had a situation, you know, they had the airspace where when you got within a certain airspace in Washington, D.C., you had to remain seated.
Right.
We had a situation on a flight where a guy got up. He had to go to the bathroom. There were 3 federal air marshals on that plane. You talk about somebody going in action and moving in motion, and then the flight attendant told the guy, no, you need to stay seated. We're within the airspace of Washington, D.C. All 3 of the guys kind of eased back down in their seat. Obviously, these Middle Eastern men are testing to see, hey, has the U.S. let up on the federal air marshals being in flight?
Exactly.
This is a flight coming out of Washington, D.C.
And just like you guys were able to spot the air marshals, don't think that they're not doing the same
thing. That's why they're doing the dry run.
They're like, okay, let's see who gets up and tries to stop us. And then, you know, to have the other ones there that are, you know, distracting the stewardesses. And see, this speaks to what happened during 9/11, because at that time, the government. Now, if they do background checks on these 3 men that were on this airplane, you know, there's probably a very high likelihood that they're related to each other, or they're from a certain place, or they're doing certain things in America at the same time in different places. And see, that's what was going on during 9/11. They had the pilots. They said, hey, you know, we see this guy, he's over in Florida learning to be a commercial pilot. We see another guy, he's in another place, but they never brought the information
together.
They
were buying flight simulator software that you play.
Exactly.
I mean, you could download it on your computer off the internet now.
Right. And look at, like, what I just read about this Sentinel project, that if they even try to implement it, it causes national security issues. But the sickest part of this is that the man with the answer that DHS came to and
That's
began
right.
to court about the software, those men are sitting in federal prison.
And you know what, Cliff? The IRP software, Silk Solutions, the case investigative lifecycle software by IRP Solutions called Silk, this is exactly what this software was designed to do. And and when I say this software, that there was one module that I was talking about back in 2003, the Department of Homeland Security, they liked so much what they saw, they actually handed over information to IRP Solutions. Stephen Cooper provided some documents, and those documents, and in his email, he said, for IRP eyes only, not to be disclosed or released outside of IRP Solutions. This was information that gave scenarios, just like Middle Eastern men jumping up on a plane, running up and down the aisle. How are you going to deal with that? They gave us those kind of scenarios and said, put a federal face on this software. We love what we see, but this software is robust enough so that it is web-enabled so that it can handle thousands of users at the same time. I already said you had the FBI, Secret Service, TSA, Federal Air Marshals, Immigration and Customs, and the rest of the alphabet soup was in this meeting. These guys, they saw something that they know they didn't have. And Cliff, the component of the software they were talking about was the confidential informant module. The 9/11 Commission report said that law enforcement agencies, each at different levels, at the federal, state, local, all of them had different pieces of information of managing their informants.
That information, exactly.
And so it was like this software would allow them to do that, and this one component of the software, and, you know, we talked numbers already, $400 million, $800-something million that just went down the tube, over $1 billion. This one component of the software was worth $100 million that IRP Solutions had that, and like I said, this was one of 18 modules. You think that, you know, folks, and we'll get into, you know, people want to say contractors, they're not getting ready to let a small startup IT company walk away with $100 million. And then when they see that they got other modules as well, callers, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. You're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. We have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, we have a caller, Robert Wichters. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. This is Bob from New Stalker, gentlemen. We've had you guys on
as
a guest. I got a message from Olivia to call in and show some support, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
That's great. It's great to hear you guys talk.
We're happy to have you on.
Well, we need to have you guys on again, and we'll talk about that sometime.
We hope we're talking about something.
What really perplexes me about this case is it's really a situation of selective prosecution.
Absolutely.
It was a matter of a bill not getting paid or not being paid in a timely fashion, and if we threw everyone in prison from the federal government all the way down that doesn't pay bills on time, we wouldn't have enough guards for everyone in prison. So there's obviously something more to this.
That's true.
I continue looking at it and very much applaud the work that you both do.
We appreciate you, having us on your show and coming on to support us. It really means a lot. And like you say, you know, when you have prosecutors that are going out of the way to get an indictment, you know, it's definitely you called it exactly what it is, selective prosecution. And we'll get into some more about the case, but he impaneled two grand juries. When the first one would not give him an indictment, he went and got another one and called only one witness in front of that grand jury. You know who that witness was? FBI agent Moen, that was part of the raid on IRP Solutions. So he's going out of his way to ensure that, hey, I gotta get this conviction.
This indictment.
I gotta get this indictment so that I can get these guys in jail. And it really speaks to what you mentioned, that you know, they select who they want to be, who they want put in prison. Because like you said, you know, if they put, where would the whole country would be?
And you know, they did away with debtor's prison, right?
and
you know what?
1913.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you got the date. Hey, we're going to have you as one of our historians on call. Hey, you know what, Bob? But you know, some of the things that we'll be talking about too is the fact that how in the IRP 6 case, the system is designed to try and bankrupt people. You know, they went everywhere behind IRP and behind the IRP 6 as the guys, and as we were trying to close business. Hey, business, you make money, you start revenue generating. You pay your debt, case closed. They orchestrated, basically, and fabricated a case because of the fact that everywhere IRP went, they went behind IRP to ensure that they did not close business. And like you said, it's like, you know, they drew up a blueprint on how to prosecute someone. And like Cliff said, if at first you don't indict, try again.
Exactly.
Well, it's a mess, and we're going to continue following it. And, you know, anything we can do to help, obviously awareness is important. And we'll keep working on that.
Okay, we appreciate it, Bob. Thank you so much for coming on. We only got a few minutes left. We want to try to get a couple other callers that have been on hold. And we appreciate your support and for coming on to be on with us.
This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. Call ahead. Caller, where are you calling from, and what's your question?
Terry, are you there?
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Terry?
Yes. Olivia and I have been talking about the IRP 6 case, and I first want to thank you guys for doing such a wonderful job getting information out about injustices that no one's talking about. You know, if I do nothing, it's make things public, first of all. And second of all, I look at issues in terms of constitutional violations. So
yes.
I have contacts with several law firms, and I wondered whether or not having other constitutional lawyers file amicus briefs on behalf of the IRP6 to support their case would be helpful. I know that should be run past the attorney who's handling the appeal, but I'm offering that, and Olivia can get back.
And you know, Terry.
Pardon?
And Terry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. This is Sam. And, Terry, I saw an email that you sent in to A Just Cause, and we really, really appreciate your interest and your advocacy for a. You stated some very compelling things in your email. I'm glad we were able to get you on the show tonight because of the fact I truly believe that you are passionate about this kind of situation. And yes, you're absolutely right. I know a couple of the things that Olivia pointed out to me that we're going to take you up on the offer. And so, you know,
okay.
Some things, like you said, you know, we do have to check some things as far as with the attorney and
yeah.
and just validate some things and as far as which direction to go. But the fact that you're thinking outside of the box, and as everyone has stated already on the call tonight, Scott, Steve, Bob, situation like this, who have a heart for this kind of thing, to get involved, get active. It may not be happening to you today, but it could hit you today or tomorrow. It could hit someone else in your family. Terry, we are so appreciative of what you're talking about.
We just had three more Christians arrested today in Michigan for no constitutional reason.
That's terrible.
Right. And so I'll be talking with another law firm on their behalf tomorrow. I may be old, but I'm not silent.
In the fight, age is just a number.
Thank you. Never too old.
We appreciate it. We're coming down on about 5 minutes. We want to try to get the other callers that are on hold, but we appreciate you reaching out.
And stay in contact with Olivia, and she'll let us know what's going on with you.
Hey, Terry, and also we might just arrange to have you on the show, and we could talk a little bit more about this and the constitutional violations and the things that you and folks that you're associated with can assist. I mean, like we say, A Just Cause Coast to Coast provides education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
Well, let me get...
is to have folks like yourself on.
The lawyer.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just a contact, so... let me get a constitutional lawyer who's argued in front of the Supreme Court to be on the show on their behalf.
Awesome. Okay, Terry, thank you for your call. We will be in touch with you. We have about 4 minutes left. Let's try and get one more caller in here. Have a good night, Terry.
Thanks
very much.
Thanks, Terry.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Okay, caller, are you there?
Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Are you there?
Why are you on the phone?
Hi. Who's calling? Okay, let's go to the next caller. Scott, are you still there?
You know, I am still here, and great show, you guys. It's always good, of course, Bob and Steve. You know, I like to frame, and you know, we kind of started here, and Ethel touched on it a lot. You guys touched on it a lot, but this is the foundation of the problem. And this is the part where I say shame on you, those of you involved in this, because not only does it affect the children of those that are involved in this directly, Kurt Phelps, who committed suicide because he wanted to bring Don Miller's case, but the children of those of the IRP states. But, you know, I asked Don Miller's dad one night, Norm Miller, how has your view of the justice system changed over the last 10, 15 years? And he said, greatly. And, you know, mine has too. My dad was a deputy sheriff. I've got four of my closest friends are either retired law enforcement or current law enforcement. Our past elected sheriff here in Tulare County is a good family friend. And I was raised with a healthy, healthy respect for law enforcement. But this destroys that. And there are young people growing up in early Wisconsin. There are young people growing up in this country. And it's important for them to be able to have a healthy respect for our law enforcement. And these guys are tearing that up to shreds. And that is insane because I got some little girls that they've got to grow up and they've got to be able to trust the law enforcement to be able to call them when they need help. They've got to trust the law enforcement to do what is right, do what is correct, stand by a certain standard. So I just want to say, great show, guys. And if anybody's listening, you know, Don Miller case, you know, sometimes Judge Madden listens, sometimes D.A. Lipsky listens, and I always talk to them in the first person. Shame on you guys. Shame on everybody that's involved in this.
Right.
That's incorporating in
that's
this.
Right.
Because you're infecting justice.
Hey, Scott.
All over
that's absolutely right. Hey, Scott, thanks again for tonight. We really appreciate you sharing your airtime with us. We're going to come back and do this again next week. And, Scott, you know, the music has started playing, so you know what that means. You're in the business.
Take care, my brother.
That's right. We want to say thank you to our engineering crew, K&D Productions with Dustin Jackson, Harry Walker, and Ill Skillers Girl. We also want to say to the truth, we know that you're out there and we appreciate you. We're a Just Cause Coast to Coast, bringing education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
Okay. Hey, Cliff, thanks for being with us again tonight. I enjoy doing this every time. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, www.a-justcause.com. Thanks for joining us. Good night, America. Good night, Mom.
Good night.